to the PW Torch Livecast here on Thursday, December 28th, 2017. It's another taped edition of the Livecast. I'm Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. We're usually with you after Impact goes off the air on Thursday nights. But with Impact airing best of episodes last week and this week, we've taken the opportunity to record a little earlier. Andrew, how are you this week? And are you ready for our last Livecast of 2017?
I'm doing well, and I am. I'm ready for this. I'm very curious to see what happens in the next few weeks on Impact. Don Callis coming in. Hopefully it's something good. I'm slightly optimistic. Bad things always happen, but overall, I'm looking forward to 2018 on Impact.
Yeah, me too. Let's get right to it. This week's edition of the show, we're going to take a look at the Impact roster depth chart and kind of go through person by person on the roster. I had a very lengthy feature that ran in the PW Torch newsletter this week, breaking down the roster, where I saw it lining up. So my thoughts are kind of already out there, but Andrew and I can discuss the roster depth chart, where everybody is right now, and where we see them going, you know, potentially into the new year. And it's a little weird with Impact. I had some trouble doing this, Andrew, because you don't know who's going to be around and who's not going to be around. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I wrote that a lot. You know, whether it was with Bobby Lashley or EC3 or even El Patron, you're like, okay, well, if this guy is around in 2018 and sticks around past, you know, April or May, he could be here. But there was a caveat, I feel like, with a lot of these guys that, you know, we could hit April or May and they could be gone from the company, especially considering, like you pointed out, there's new management coming in. We have no idea what this company is going to look like even 3 months from now.
Yeah, this is probably the toughest year it would be to kind of rank the roster like this. I'm glad you did it because it's an interesting article that you put out. I mean, the only other comparable year would probably be 2010 when Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff came in, I believe, on that first January episode where everything was kind of up in the air. It's probably a little less so this time just because DMR is the constant. But yes, we don't know what Callis has in mind. We don't know fully what power he has. We don't know so many big names whether they're going to be around come Slammiversary. So, yeah, definitely an interesting time in the company, a weird way to look back. But I think you did a solid job here ranking everyone.
Well, thanks. Yeah, let's start. We're going to go kind of tier by tier. Let's start with the women's division, though. And this one I felt was probably the easiest to do, to be honest with you. We can sort of start from the bottom, I guess, and work our way up maybe, but we can just, you know what, with the tiers, it's probably easier just to talk about them as a whole and sort of hit on a couple of different individuals that we think might get focused on. But I had Sienna still at the top of the division. She's been the one constant for a while. They're obviously pushing Taya Valkyrie and Rosemary. Those are who I had as the top three. With Allie, Laurel Van Ness, and Diamante in the second tier below them. What did you think of the way I broke that up? I mean, I kind of see Sienna and Rosemary clearly in the top tier. I think Taya Valkyrie would have been in the top tier and more cemented there if she didn't have immigration issues that didn't allow her to be at the last set of television tapings. I think as we get into 2018, though, and they tape back in Florida again, she's going to be a pretty central part of the show. I flirted a little bit with putting Allie and Laurel Van Ness in the top tier just because, you know, they have gotten a lot of focus. But, you know, looking back, I just feel like those three have been more of a focus. Even Taya in her limited time, she's only been with the company for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. I feel like they were focused on more than the other three. Definitely would have been different if we did this a year ago. Allie absolutely would have been in the top tier a year ago, but it kind of feels to me that those are the three that they're kind of focusing on.
Yeah, I agree. This is a really tough one to rank because Laurel Van Ness, there's been rumors that she wanted to leave the company. She hasn't come. I saw a follow-up interview and she didn't confirm it, but she didn't deny it either. So that could certainly change her ranking. But yeah, it looked like they were finally giving her a serious, well, a little bit of a serious push. She still plays a very crazy character. Taya Valkyrie, had she been around, I question whether she would be Knockouts champion right now. Yeah. You know, they just love to go all in on people who have experience from elsewhere. Taya mainly so, Lucha Underground, but she's engaged to Johnny Impact. So I think she'll be definitely a top three in the coming year. Rosemary, I feel has – I would definitely say, yes, she's in the top tier. I feel she's fallen a little bit where they just – she because she had this big push for months where she was pushed as the most dominant woman. I think she beat ODB pretty briefly, just a few other wrestlers. And it looks like that's kind of fallen a bit. And down at number six, you got Diamante, who man, I don't think she wrestled a single match all year, but there's nobody else really to put.
Yeah, I think she was in – I think they did like a women's gauntlet match or something
at one point
she was in. And from what I know, I think it's injury related, which is why she hasn't been more involved. But that's the big one that kind of stands out as maybe the one that they're underutilizing the most right now. Just because you know we've talked about how just how cool of an act LAX is. Kind of feel like she should be more involved in the women's division. Just gets LAX on the show a little bit more without having to oversaturate it with Ortiz and Santana and Conan and the regular characters you kind of see. I think I noted about Laurel Van Ness and the rumors regarding her contract situation and where she may end up, if whether she stays, whether she goes. But you know, even though she's currently the Knockouts champion, and by the way, I agree with you. I think the Laurel Van Ness title win felt so random. It kind of felt like that was supposed to be Taya Valkyrie, and then she wasn't there, and they had to do something at the last set of tapings in Ottawa, and that's just what they came up with. But even as champion, I don't see that character ever being able to be a main eventer, at least main eventer in relation to that division. You know, I just don't see it. It's serious enough to be at the top of that division when you look at, you know, Sienna, who has a legitimate MMA background, I think, as well. Taya Valkyrie's a legit wrestler, and Rosemary, who I agree has fallen a little bit, but just has such a unique character. She's still kind of in that top tier to me.
Yeah, I think so too. It's such a shame that there are so few women in the company in general. I mean, earlier this year they brought in a bunch of new ones, and they just all completely disappeared. I'm talking about that battle royal that you were talking about where Diamante was in it. There was just a slew of new women, and I think one of them came back to job a few times, but otherwise, it's really, really depleted right now. And it's a shame because they used to have bragging rights over WWE for years in this aspect, but no longer, that's for sure. Did I lose you there?
Oh, sorry, I had you on mute because I'm battling a cold and coughing, and I took it off mute before I was talking. I was going to say, as I was saying, on mute so that nobody heard me, I think there are others that are listed on the roster page, but that I didn't even include. Like, I know Ava Story, I think, was still listed as being on the roster. And a lot of people that they used as basically enhancement talent for some of the other women in the division over the course of the year. Do you think that it's possible that any of them get moved up in terms of status over the course of 2018? I think Ava Story was one that was listed. I think Alicia Edwards was also one that was still listed as technically being on the roster. And I don't recall if there was anybody else. But is there anybody kind of in that bottom tier that I didn't even list that you think could be in probably not the top tier, but maybe the second tier by the end of 2018?
I don't even know. Mainly because I think maybe Ava Story could, but yeah, with these management changes, I don't know who's sticking around. My guess would be no, because Alicia Edwards, rumors are that Eddie Edwards is headed to NXT potentially sometime in 2018, so I imagine she would not probably stick around Impact. I think they would probably just go just on the indie scene to try to bring in some new women into the roster. I'm sure Callis and Damore have some people in mind, but yeah, it's overall to me, it's pretty weak right now just because how few women there are. So there, you can't help but see the same matches over and over again. And I'm sure if Gail Kim was here still around, she would probably be top tier as well. So that was a pretty big blow to the division as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think there's anybody really there that would step up. I think they'd go back to the indie scene.
Yeah.
You know, try to get somebody that's generating some buzz there, or even, you know, even going back and bringing back someone who they've utilized in the past, maybe like a Jade or somebody like that. You know, they could, there's certainly still more there that they could do. All right, let's move on to the fourth tier in terms of the men's division. And these are guys, I didn't really break down these guys too much. We ranked 30 guys, though, 30 members of the roster, and the fourth tier was members 20 through 30. And there's a lot of names here that I think, you know, at least at first glance, I thought at the beginning of 2017 or early in 2017 when they were first brought in, because not all these guys were here at the very beginning of the year. But there's several of these guys who, when they were first brought in, I thought would have been higher up on the card and more involved in the show at this point.
Yeah.
The one that kind of sticks out just looking at it right away is Kongo Kong.
Yep.
They were building Kongo Kong kind of similar to the way that WWE built Braun Strowman. They first brought him in. He was squashing guys and, you know, not squashing roster member guys. He was squashing, you know, job guys, guys who weren't active members of the roster. And then all of a sudden, you know, he had a little bit of involvement as I think he had some type of love storyline going on with Laurel Van Ness. He seemed to always be jealous of her looking for a husband. But since then he's kind of disappeared, and you know, he's the guy that, you know, is he a long term top tier guy? No, but you know, I think he could have been put into a similar role of maybe, you know, maybe like an Umaga back around 2007,
yep.
where you know, he could go up into the main event and have a program with John Cena for the world title here and there. And then he goes back down to kind of the upper mid-card or mid-card level. But he's a guy that could kind of float and you could bring up and he could have a main event program once in a while here or there. And here he is just kind of cemented at the bottom of the roster and hasn't been on TV in a while.
Yeah, that was the one that stuck out to me, too. I don't know why they – I don't know if it was money issues or what it was, or it was just like because he was a Jeff Jarrett guy. But I was disappointed to see him just disappear for such a long period of time. I thought it was working. I mean, he wasn't the next Goldberg or Monster Heel, whoever. But, I mean, I thought it was working well enough. I mean, you have guys like a Gene Snitsky or a John Heidenreich who get a big push, and it's just clear it doesn't work at all. But I thought for Kongo Kong, he was doing a solid job in the role. And like you said, I would like to see, like, say, babyface Bobby Lashley versus Kongo Kong, you know, do that at like a lockdown or something. Don't build the company around Kongo Kong. But I certainly think he could be inserted into that role for, you know, like you said, the occasional big match, just like Umaga was back in the day.
The other one, and I had him right at the top of the fourth tier, and I flirted with putting him in the third tier just with how he's been used lately, but KM, you know, and they seem to be pushing him more in recent weeks. They've got a storyline going on right now where he's trying to impress American Top Team and wants to join American Top Team. I don't know where that's going to go, but we also don't know how much longer American Top Team's going to be with the company. Mm-hmm. I know Dan Lambert, from what I understand, his relationship was with Jeff Jarrett. Obviously, Jeff Jarrett is gone. And I don't know where American Top Team is going to go from here. So if they're just gone at the next set of tapings and never heard from again, it's going to leave that KM storyline with a lot of loose ends that I don't think are going to be able to be tied up.
Yeah, I think he's had a pretty disappointing year overall. We were both kind of fans of his Biff from Back to the Future type vignettes he had going on for weeks. I thought they had a little something with that, and then they dropped it, made him a jobber, and now we're kind of sort of supposed to take him seriously again, but he recently attacked James Storm from behind and then was just easily disposed of within seconds. So that makes me just say, what's the point then? You know, why give him enough TV time to try to make him look credible? I do like the act. He's not main event material, but he should be a solid mid-car. So I think within the next year, if nothing else, just due to a depleted roster, especially if a few of those bigger names leave, I think he will definitely move up a tier here.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think could move up a tier. There's a couple of others, too. I think we could see Fala Ba move up a tier.
Oh, yeah.
Only because, you know, he was kind of, for whatever reason, never was explained. He was a judge for a grand championship match a couple of weeks ago. And now it seems he's going to be involved in the storyline around that grand championship. So I think we could see him move up a tier over the course of the next year. And it should be explained, too, when we talk about tiers and where guys are, this is not you know, our dream scenario of where guys should be. This is kind of an analysis of where we think guys are right now and where they could be next year based upon how they're being used. Because, and we'll see this as we get into the, especially the second and the first tier, if it was a dream scenario and where I would like to see guys, it would look a heck of a lot different than it actually does. But yeah, Falaba, I think, is a guy who I think we could see move up as well. And then the other one that's kind of an outlier, and I don't really know what his status is with the company right now. I know he's been hurt for most of the year, is DJ Z. You know, he's still listed on the roster, so I still think that he's got to be under contract in at least some way, shape, or form. But I know he's also been hurt for most of the year. I think he just recently got hurt again and is going to be out for a while. So it doesn't seem like he's going to be back anytime soon. But he's a guy who has been kind of a constant in the X division for a while now, and could be a decent player for that X division. I think Desmond Xavier against DJZ would be a really good athletic match. DJZ against Ishimori, kind of same thing. You know, there's a lot of guys that I think you could have him come in and work with that would be that would put together a really good match. He's just he's been injured so much. He's worked his way and kind of been pushed down the depth chart. I think if he comes back and is healthy at some point in 2018, we could see him, you know, climb pretty quickly as well.
I would like to see that. I've always been a fan of his act. I mean, he basically peaked as a character around 2011-ish when he was feuding with Rob Van Dam. And just I thought he was solid in the role, but they never did anything with him after that. And I mean, he kind of has an inspirational story because he almost died a couple of years ago. And if he still can go, I would love to see them give him another shot and actually treat him seriously, because his last few runs in the company were just completely forgettable. I mean, he was at one point reduced to being the DJ for the Bromans, which is far, far, far beneath him.
Absolutely. Anybody else in that fourth tier that you think could climb in 2018?
I think the ones basically you pointed out. I think Abyss, at one point I argued he should be the company's Undertaker. You push him as a special attraction, but he sadly doesn't have it anymore. So he'll be in comedy territory for some time. I've liked what I've seen from Idris Abraham. I wouldn't mind seeing him get a little bit more. Otherwise, I think this is probably where it's going to be at. I don't see Homicide getting another big singles push. He just seems to be a background player in LAX. And and Braxton Sutter, his singles run has never done too much. I think to me, he's a tag guy. Just find him a similar partner and slot him in that spot. But yeah, I don't see him getting a singles push this year.
Yeah, me neither. All right, well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll look at the third tier. We still got to go through the third tier of the roster, the second tier of the roster, and the top tier of the roster. So we'll do that after the break. Before we go into the break, though, we need to tell you a little bit more about Harry's Razors. We've been telling you about Harry's for a while. And Harry's, you know what? They fit into your New Year's resolution. There's a couple things. Generally, people have New Year's resolutions. What do they want to do, right? They want to be smarter with their personal finances. Well, Harry's can save you about $100 a year if you're a frequent shaver. Also, a common New Year's resolution is to take better physical care of yourself. And Harry's products have won countless grooming awards, and they'll keep you looking and feeling great in 2018. I've been using Harry's for a couple of months now. I got to tell you, the quality of the blades is fantastic. The quality of the shave is fantastic. The razors get shipped right to your door. You don't have to go anywhere. And the best thing about Harry's is I know I'm not overpaying for my razors. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price. That's why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, they're two ordinary guys, just like me and Andrew. We talk about Impact Wrestling every week. Well, Jeff and Andy, they were fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades, and they started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's stripped out the unnecessary features, the vibrating handle, the heated blades, the 15 lubricating strips, and all the unnecessary costs to deliver customers one perfect razor at an amazing price. A good shave comes down to good blades. That's it. And because Harry's owns the factory, they're able to deliver amazing quality blades for just $2 a blade compared to $4 a blade or more that you'll pay at the drugstore. And how about this? All of their products, they're backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades, they'll give you a free trial set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/pwchorch. Just pay for shipping. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value. You'll get it for free when you sign up at harrys.com/PWTorch. All you got to do is cover the shipping costs. Your free trial set will include a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. To get your free trial, go to harrys.com/PWTorch right now. That's harrys.com/PWTorch. Andrew and I will be back with more on the PW Torch livecast in just a minute.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch livecast here on Thursday, December 28th, 2017. It's Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. We're breaking down the Impact roster, running through the depth chart, and where guys are here at the end of 2017, maybe where they could go in 2018. And Andrew, let's now look at the third tier. And this is guys that I had ranked 13 through 19. So not exactly 10. You know, the tiers are more just where I saw them kind of stacked up on television. So this goes from 13 to 19. I'll just run it down quickly, and then we can talk about it. 13, Taiji Ishimori. 14, Garza Jr. 15, Chris Adonis. 16, Sanjay Dutt. 17, Desmond Xavier. 18, Grado. And 19, Caleb Conley. Caleb Conley is a guy that I would have had in the fourth tier, I think probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it seems that since Bound for Glory, and maybe a little bit before Bound for Glory, now that I think of it, he's kind of been attached to Trevor Lee and getting more and more ring time. So he was a guy that I thought, you know, when you look at guys like KM and Mario Bocara and all these other guys that have kind of been on and off TV, Conley has been on TV enough that I think he deserves a spot in the third tier above those fourth tier guys.
Yeah, I'd say so too. I think he spent a good portion of the year playing the suicide character, and then he would also be himself. He usually come up on the losing side of the equation, but yeah, they're giving him a little something now. I would really, really like to know what the Cult of Lee is. I wish they would explain that and give those guys just more time to talk. But yeah, he's kind of jumped up a bit here. I don't know if he'll get much more. I think he's still kind of lacking something, and I don't know what it is. But I think he'll be around this spot probably for the next year or so.
Yeah, I would think so too. I don't see him climbing much higher than that. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody in this third tier that stands out right away as a guy that definitely you think will be in the second tier come 2018 when we're doing this a year from now?
This is an interesting list because these are all quite a few guys that got big pushes during the year. Ishimori's getting something now. Garza Jr. got a fairly big push briefly for a few weeks. Sanjay Dutt did. Desmond Xavier. And then one by one, they were pretty much all taken away. But out of that group, I want to say Desmond Xavier would be my pick of this group to possibly move up into the next tier, or Sanjay Dutt, mainly just because, as you noted in the article, that Damore is really big on him. I don't think you or I quite see it that way, but if management sees him, he could definitely move into, I would say, second tier. For a bit. Yeah, those would be my picks.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that a guy who's most likely to move up is probably Sanjay Dutt, just based upon what we've heard in interviews from, like you said, mm-hmm. Scott D'Amore. The guy that I'd like to see move up the most is probably, I'd say it's a tie between Desmond Xavier and Taiji Ishimori. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys, Ishimori especially, I think has been really good and underrated, I think, in what he's been able to do over the course of the last, what has it been, probably 6 to 8 months that he's been involved in the company. He puts on really good matches. You know, he's solid every time he's in the ring. I think if you were to put him in a program with somebody, I think he could do some good things. And, you know, he was a featured part of that Super X Cup with Desmond Xavier. I think they were the finals, if I remember correctly. So both of those guys, I think, should be higher. If I had to make a pick, though, of one guy who definitely would be, I agree with you. I think it's Sanjay Dutt, just based on the evidence of he's been talked about, you know, quite favorably by Scott D'Amore in some interviews.
Yeah, I would say Chris Adonis is probably going to be you have him at 15. That seems about right. Not where I would put him by any means, just if I was booking this promotion. But I think that is kind of how management sees him. I'm sure at some point during the year he will probably break up from Eli Drake, but I imagine he will still be on TV. They give him enough credibility. They give him enough mic time. Somebody there sees something in him. But I think, you know, as an act, he peaked in 2006. Maybe. So I don't think he will ever move up to the top tier, but he could certainly be in line for more pushes over the course of 2018.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's ever going to be in the top tier, but I think he could be useful. You know, I don't think that he's a complete waste of space on the roster. Like, I think he's good enough in the ring, obviously has a really good look, and he's decent enough on the mic that he could be useful in a mid-card role. You know, I don't think he's ever going to reach the potential that people thought he had in 2006 or 2005, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I think he can be at least a useful part of the roster. Now, part of that, of course, depends on, you know, what's his salary. If he's grossly overpaid, then you'd rather not have him on the roster at all. But if his pay is in check, then, yeah, you know, I don't see why he couldn't be a useful part of the team moving forward.
He's another guy that I mean, he's teaming up with Eli Drake right now, but he's another guy that I would just put in a tag team with somebody. Find somebody that he has charisma with.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, as you noted in here, too, the tag division is just so depleted. There's two teams.
Yeah, there's two teams, basically.
Yeah, so roll the dice and just put some of these guys like the Braxton Sutters, Chris Adonis when he's free. Find a few of those guys and just see if they have anything as a team and run with them, because if you have two teams, there's just no point to the division, really.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to do. In fact, I was actually going to, at one point, do a separate tag team tier, mm-hmm. and then I started looking at it, and I'm like, there's no teams. You know, there's two. And, yeah, I mean, technically, Fala Bar and Mario Baccara are still on the roster together, but when's the last time they teamed up?
At least 3 months, I would say.
And, I mean, Reno Scum is gone, and they've been, you know, there was an injury there, they've been gone for a while, but VOW's gone. I mean, there's no other teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as an aside, it is kind of weird that people get, like, released. Like, Reno Scum was, you know, they announced that they left the company, but I just don't see why they can't just come back now and then for tapings. I'm curious how their contracts are structured, as an aside.
Yeah, unless, you know, like you said, unless they were guys that were, you know, Jeff Jarrett guys, and the people in charge, you know, now they're healthy again, but the people in charge just kind of don't see what Jeff saw, and they've moved on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there any guys looking at this third tier? Are there any guys that you think we talked about who we think, you know, might or is most capable, or most not most capable, but most likely to move up? Are there any guys that you look here and say, okay, this is the guy that I think may move down in 2018?
Let's see. From this group, I would go Garza Jr. I don't see it. A lot in him. I saw a lot in Hector Garza back in the very early days of TNA, 2004-ish, 2005-ish. Garza Jr. hasn't struck me yet. Maybe he has more in him. I think he's pretty young, but it looks like his push has already been taken away for the moment. The company will, I assume, be rebooting slightly in the coming weeks once they go to their next set of tapings, and we'll get an idea of what the direction is. But if Garza Jr. is being left off of those tapings or being minimized, then I would say that would probably set the tone for him in 2018. What do you think about that?
Here's a guy, though, like you said, put him in a tag team. I mean, he was tagging with Laredo Kid when they came into the company. And Laredo Kid is still technically listed on the roster. I couldn't tell you the last time we saw him on TV. But, you know, there's a team that you could put back together and at least give you a third team in the tag division.
I like them better as a tag team than Garza Jr. as a singles act at this point. Yeah
me too, 100%. I totally agree there. And then there's, you know, the guys, I think we already talked about the guys we'd like to see move up and the guys that we think would move up. What about Grado? Grado's kind of the one guy we haven't talked about here. I think he's been deported, technically. He's no longer with the company. But I don't really see him moving much. I mean, he's useful in a comedy role, But I think that that comedy role never gets any higher than the third tier for sure. I think when he, and you know, I think I jokingly wrote in the story, even deportations aren't forever in pro wrestling. So we're going to see him come back here at some point in 2018, but I kind of expect him to just slide right into the same role.
I'm a little surprised that Grado has never caught on stateside. Like, I've watched footage of him in England. Here in the UK, he's just crazy over with some of those crowds. And I don't know if his humor is just not translating quite well, or the angles he's in aren't that great. But I just thought he would do a little better. He's doing fine. I mean, people seem to enjoy him. But, yeah, I don't think there's too much of an upside. And I would say this is probably where he'll be if he sticks around in 2018, just to, you know, in somewhere in the late third tier.
You know, one thing, and I don't know the answer to this, but how is he presented in the UK? Because I agree, I've seen videos of him in the UK, and the crowds are just super into Grado.
Mm-hmm.
Here, he's strictly a comedic character, right?
Yeah.
Is the presentation of the Grado character, and I don't know the answer to this, but is it any more serious in the UK? And that's why the fans take him more seriously? Because I agree, you watch videos from things over there, it's complete chaos sometimes when he comes to the ring. The fans are just really, really into him.
I would guess a little bit of that is at least attributed to the Madonna song that he's been able to, Like a Prayer, he uses his theme song over there. So that's kind of a blast for people to get into because it's so ridiculous. Whereas here, he just has a super generic techno theme that doesn't get him off to a hot start when he comes out. I would say that's a little part of it. But yeah, otherwise, I don't know. The clips I've seen, he hasn't been treated overly serious, but maybe it's just the hometown boy, home countryman sort of thing. But I've just always been kind of surprised that he has not caught on in a big way here.
Yeah, same here. Just because, like you said, you look at you watch the video clips, and I agree. Like, you watch it, it doesn't look like he's presented as a legitimate, you know, serious fighter or wrestler over there, but the crowd just reacts so much better. And part of that could just be that, hey, you know what, he's a homegrown guy, and he's one of their top talents and has been for a while and treated that way. All right, let's take a look at the second tier, and then we'll take a break after the second tier and come back and wrap up the show talking about the top tier. But taking a look at the second tier on the Impact depth chart, and I had this ranking going from number 7 through number 12, and we'll run it through here and then discuss again. I had number 7, Moose, number 8, OVE, number 9, Eddie Edwards, number 10, Petey Williams. This one was painful, but number 11, Trevor Lee, and number 12, Matt Sydal. Let's, I guess, look at first, and I think we're both going to agree here, the one guy, if you had to pick one guy in this second tier that absolutely should be higher and absolutely should be in the top tier, who would you pick that guy to be? Because for me, it's Trevor Lee. There's no question about it.
If I was in control of Impact, which I'm not, but if I was, Trevor Lee would be top three player for 2018. That would be one of my biggest moves I would make. Definitely him.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you look at here, there's some other choices of guys that I think could move into that top tier over the course of this year. Because if you look at the top tier, and, you know, spoiler alert, you could probably figure it out, but Bobby Lashley, Alberto El Patron, Eli Drake, EC3, all guys that have been rumored to have their contracts be up at some point in 2018. So it could be that a lot of these second-tier guys are moved up into the top tier at some point in 2018. Who are some of the guys that you think could move into those top spots? Because I look at it, and I hope that Trevor Lee is one of them. I don't know if he necessarily would be. But Eddie Edwards, who's another guy who could be gone, and Moose are the other two that kind of stand out as being those guys could easily slide into the top tier, and I don't think anybody would think less of the company for doing so.
Yeah, I definitely think Moose. he's had this has been an interesting group, just looking at all these guys in this tier. Moose, I feel, is the only one that's been pretty consistent with his push. He's been near the top. I mean, Petey Williams just came back. Trevor Lee has been all over the place. But yeah, I think Moose, if Bobby Lashley leaves, if Alberto El Patron leaves or some of those guys go, I think Moose is definitely going to be a top three or four player in the company. Let's see. Otherwise, Petey Williams is hard to judge on that one.
I wouldn't have had him in the second tier until except for the last 2 months, you know, where he's come in. Granted, the tapings were in Canada, but, you know, not only is he in a big X Division title match at pay-per-view, but he's in a world title match a couple weeks later. You know, he's just been kind of had the rocket strapped to him over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it's been, I mean, it's been enjoyable to watch. I've always liked his work, and he goes way back with D'Amore. Back to Team Canada days, which is like 2006-ish. So I imagine he will probably stay about in this role. I don't think he'll probably move up too much higher. But, I mean, if those guys depart, you know, maybe they will call upon him. Maybe he will. It's hard to say in this era. There's so many people that, like, they put in enough work and they're given a title run. I would not put that out of the question for him to get a short title run at some point in his career. Matt Sydal management seems to love. So I could see him moving up a bit. I don't quite get that one, their investment in him, but they seem to be into him. So I could certainly see Matt Sydal moving up with some departures. And OVE is kind of tough to tell at this point where they may be headed.
Yeah, I have OVE in the second tier, and I think that, you know, they're probably going to remain there just due to the fact that there's no other teams on the roster.
Right.
You know, if they, and at some point they're going to have to do something with that in 2018. They can't go an entire year with LAX and OVE continuing to feud over the tag titles. So you have to imagine that at some point they're going to do something to address that tag team depth on the show. But until they do, I mean, I don't see how they are pushed any further down than where they are now. They really can't be if you want the tag team titles to have any sort of presence on your show.
Yeah, and I guess lucky for Impact, they are finally clicking a bit as a group. The introduction of Sami Callihan has done wonders for them. I feel the feud with LAX is kind of clicking a bit. It's more violent and wild than anything you'll find in WWE. So while they kind of have gone a little bit too far in the violence with some chair shots and stuff like that, I think it's both teams are a good act. But there's only so much further they can go with these two. We've already seen it multiple times. So, yeah, they're badly going to need some other teams. But I imagine OVE will still get a bit of a push because people seem fairly receptive to him.
Yeah, I would have liked to seen them explain Sami Callihan's involvement a little more.
Yeah,
it just seemed like he showed up, and not only was he all of a sudden part of the group, he was kind of all of a sudden the leader of the group. So to have a guy come in to an established team and become the leader over that team felt a little strange, but you know, at the same time, they needed something because them by themselves, you know, wandering around Mexico in those vignettes that they had were just painful. Oh, those bad.
Yeah. Maybe it was just me, but I actually really enjoyed the one-on-one showdown he had with Conan a couple weeks ago where they just met out on the street and he beat him up. That works for me. And the Crist brothers have not shown to be very versatile on the mics. They just resort to standard wrestling 101, just yell as loud as you can for 30 seconds. So Callihan has been a good addition, and I'll be very curious to see where they're doing in a year. I hope they can keep up the momentum for their sake and for the show's sake, but maybe without other teams to feud with, it's tough to say at this point.
And then, you know, the one guy that I think we all hope is elevated, Trevor Lee at number 11. Yeah. You know, do you think there's a legitimate chance they move him into the top tier in 2018? Because I wish that they would. I don't have a lot of faith that they will. You know, I kind of feel like it's been long enough. And maybe new management and Don Callis, maybe they see something different, hopefully. But, you know, I just feel like he's been in this spot kind of spinning his tires for such a long period of time that this is just where the people in charge see him and it's not going to change much.
Yeah, it's weird to say because he has the belt, but he's still vastly underutilized.
Yeah.
Because he usually opens up the show. He's still way too much of a comedy figure. But this guy can go in the ring. He's got a distinct look. He's great. I mean, you know, just listening to like Bruce Mitchell talk about the matches he's seen him in, and we've only seen his work on Impact, which sounds like a fraction of as good as that stuff. I think there's a chance. I don't know. Whenever I listen to Killing the Town, Don Callis just comes off as a really smart wrestling mind. So I hope he sees something in him that D'Amore doesn't, because it looks like D'Amore probably sees something in him, but maybe not a ton. I mean, same with Jeff Jarrett, because Lee came in, got a bit of a push. He won the X Division title right away and then moved into just a complete goofball. It seems like they're trying to fix that a little bit, but there's still so far to go, and they have something so good in him. And if some of those big names do leave, I hope they give some of that money to him to try to lock him into a long-term deal, because he definitely should be a top five player. And I'm really hoping it happens for them in 2018.
Yeah, and just feature him more as a heavyweight guy at the top of the card, I think would be so beneficial. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go to break, and then we come back. We'll look at the top tier and finish breaking down the roster depth chart. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at PWPodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's PWPodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, we're breaking down the roster depth chart here this week on the Livecast as Impact once again is airing a best of episode on Pop TV tonight. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. We're here every Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, as soon as Impact goes off the air. We're going to look at the top tier of the roster in just a second. Andrew, though, one thing that I forgot to mention that I would like to get your thoughts on. I read today, I think it was PW Insider that was reporting that Impact has moved on from the people in charge of their ring crew, that there was either an agreement couldn't be made on money or whatever the case was. They're moving on to a different ring crew, and there was some speculation that they could move away from the six-sided ring and back to a four-sided ring, which we saw them do. Saw them do that during the Hogan days. What are your stance on the ring shape? You know, do you think a move back to the four-sided ring is where they should go? Do you think they should stick with six sides? Where do you fall in the ring debate? Because everyone seems to have their own opinion.
You know, I was firmly six sides, because I still remember the reading about it in the Torch years ago, how after they left Nashville, they were going to debut that on the Fox Sports show. And when I first saw it, I wouldn't say it blew my mind, but it certainly intrigued me. And I grew to like it just because of all the different X Division guys that were in those matches and just kind of some fond memories of that. Over the years, I think you watch matches and sometimes it's just awkward the way that guys move. They don't hit they like change their course mid running. And it's just that has taken me out of it on occasion. I'm not going to be upset at this point, especially I think mainly because of how far Impact has fallen. It's not like they're this underdog anymore. They've just almost nearly irrelevant at times. So it's almost, to me, better to get rid of that six-sided ring just because they're identified with that. So if they want to start off a new era for the 20th time, might as well just go back to four. I don't think I would complain. How about you?
I wouldn't complain either. Every guy that I've talked to that has had to wrestle in the six-sided ring, and granted, it has been many, but every guy that at indie shows I've seen or whatever the case may be that I've asked about working in that type of ring has said that it sucks. They talk about how difficult it is to move around, kind of like what you said. It takes you out of your element. You're not used to the different sides. A couple of guys have also pointed out that it's much stiffer. And I don't know if that just has to do with the construction or what, but I think, you know, most guys seem to prefer the traditional ring. It's a little softer, I guess, and not as stiff, and just, you know, that's what most people train on. So you kind of have to really adapt when you have all these different turnbuckles and, you know, six sides and all ropes all over the place. Like I said, it messes up guys' steps when they're running the ropes and whatnot. So, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to them going back to a regular ring at all. I think, you know, my impression from the people I've spoken to about this over the years is that most guys would probably prefer that. So if the talent prefers it and they're kind of moving in this direction of being a talent-friendly company, that's at least how they want to come across. You know, we've seen them allowing guys to retain their intellectual properties and things of that nature. I think it only makes sense to, if the talent wants to go to a four-sided ring, you go to a four-sided ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be down for that. I would say also get rid of those neon green ropes, and I'll be pretty happy. So let me ask you also, I read today that they are planning for Lockdown to be another pay-per-view coming in 2018. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? They're producing the one-night-onlys anyway. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're not producing pay-per-views. They're just taping them and pre-recording them. So I don't know what the numbers are. We'll never know this. But if they get five or six times the buys on a live pay-per-view that they do on a taped one night only, then yeah, I think it makes sense. You know, it gives you something to build to from a storytelling standpoint. It kind of gives you a natural crescendo to build towards. But also, if you're going to be taping shows anyway, you know, why not try to do three or four of them a year? You can kind of work it so that, okay, your next set of tapings for when Lockdown begins, those tapings start on Sunday. And then you tape Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday after that, or whatever the case may be. They're taping matches for them anyway, for the one night only. So if you're going to produce them, why not try to get the most bang for your buck? I don't think if you're there and you're taping the television over an X amount of days anyway, you're already taping a one night only, I can't imagine it costs much more to tape or to run a live pay-per-view as opposed to a tape one. I can't imagine that it's that much of a difference.
Yeah, I agree. It makes me happy for a couple of reasons. One is just it gives me a little bit more confidence that the company will be around if they're looking out, you know, 4 or 5 months in advance. The other is just like the way they structure their stories has been kind of weird without being able to build towards pay-per-views. At one point, they were doing 12 a year, and I really hope they don't go back to that.
That's weird.
But I wouldn't mind 4 to 5, maybe, just, you know, every other month, give us something to look forward to. Feuds can culminate, they end, you move on to new stuff, wrestlers debut, whatever you want to do for those shows. So I'm glad to hear the news. I've never gotten behind all cage matches all night. That's always been silly to me, but overall, yeah, I was pretty pleased, I guess, to read that.
Yeah, I think quarterly is the sweet spot. You know, if you go 4 a year and 1 a quarter, I think that's kind of the sweet spot that works for at least the way they present their television.
Yeah, I think so too.
Awesome. All right, well, let's look at this top tier. And, of course, this is, if you were following along, this is rankings 1 through 6. And this, again, is how we, or at least when I put this together, how I see them slotted in reality. Not necessarily a wish list of where who I want to see pushed more or less. So the top tier ranked 1 through 6. I had Bobby Lashley as number 1. And this, I think, is debatable because I really debated putting El Patron number 1. But he missed such a big chunk of the year that I hesitated in doing so. I had Bobby Lashley number 1. Berto El Patron number 2. Eli Drake number 3. Johnny Impact number 4. EC3 number 5. And LAX number 6. What did you think of this top tier? Would you have ranked it any differently? Like I said, I really, as I perceive it, I think that they believe El Patron is the biggest star in the company. But he missed, and with the suspension and the fact that he didn't come in until a little bit into the year anyway, he missed such big portions of the year that I didn't feel I could put him as the top guy.
Yeah, I think if you look at the entire year, I would probably go Lashley. But right now I probably would go Patron just because how heavily they've invested into him. The fact that Bound for Glory was basically built around him, just unfortunately. I don't get what they see in this guy. I've mentioned it a few times, but yeah, I mean, you could make a case for either guy. I think But yeah, for some reason, I think he's their number one right now.
What did you think of Eli Drake at number three? Because he's obviously the current world champion, and you would think the world champion would be higher up than that. But his whole first half of the year, he was not treated as a main eventer, let alone the world champion. And now here he is, the end of the year, obviously carrying the belt. He strikes me, and granted he's a heel, but he strikes me as a guy that they like, and they like a lot, but they're not totally invested in just yet. I think you can draw some similarities between Eli Drake and Jinder Mahal, not in the sense that they're the same wrestler or anything like that, but just in how they've been pushed. You know, you can kind of tell that they're into Eli Drake, but they don't seem willing to go all in on Eli Drake, and that's kind of where I feel like he is at this point.
Yeah, he reminds me of when The Miz held the WWE title and he had Alex Riley by his side. Had the title for months, but you knew the way he was positioned, he was like opening up shows. He wasn't really in the main event. It was still the John Cena show. That's how it feels to me right now, which is unfortunate. But they put themselves in this position because, like you said, he didn't really mean anything the first half of the year. We were going on week after week about how he deserved a better push. And then suddenly they gave him the biggest, they gave him the title, which was too much. So he's in this weird spot right now where he has to justify this title. But it's like the Jinder Mahal thing where it's like, well, you didn't really give us a story to invest in. He just suddenly was really good. But it still looks like, they have more interest in the moment in Lashley and El Patron, for sure, I would say. I hope he stays in this role, and I hope he doesn't turn babyface. But it's going to be tough if some big names leave, because he needs people to feud with, really, to get people to buy into him as a top guy.
What do you think of Johnny Impact? I had him as number four. Do you think he could move up or down this list? I mean, he's in the top tier, but do you think that they'll push him further up towards number one over the course of the year? I mean, they came in, or he comes in, they have him pushed to the main event of Bound for Glory right away. You know, I'm not into Johnny Impact. I think he has the charisma of a snail. But, clearly the people in charge seem to think differently. And do you think he could be someone that they kind of push towards, or even closer towards the top of the card?
Unfortunately, I do. I could see them wanting to really play up like, oh, my God, he finally won a world title, if not counting Lucha Underground. I think that's where they could be headed. Like he finally reached his dream. I would love to see him turn heel, because I think he's fantastic in Lucha Underground as Johnny Mundo. I think he did the best work of his career there. Impact doesn't seem to get this guy. And yeah, he's cutting the weirdest promos. There's nothing overly likable about him. I don't relate to Johnny Impact in any way. If he's a really flashy wrestler, a good-looking guy, he makes movies, he's kind of interesting, but he just doesn't connect. But I don't think management sees that. I think they see him as a guy that WWE overlooked, and now he's theirs, and they should go all in on him.
You mean you can't relate with taking people to Slam Town?
If you watch Lucha Underground, he brings that line up, and it's like hilarious because he's so oblivious to how stupid it sounds, because he's a heel and he hangs out with other cheeseball heels. But when you say it as a babyface, it doesn't work at all. It sounds ridiculous. He can't pull it off, and he needs to drop it. Needs to drop Slam Town.
It sounds awful. I agree, though. A heel turn would be good for him. I like him as a heel. Another guy that we talked about as potentially being gone at some point this year is EC3. EC3 to me was scaled back huge in 2017. And I don't know why that was. I have a conspiracy theory why that was. I think if they're trying to move away from anything and everything Dixie Carter, even though it's a character name, he's got the last name Carter. The gimmick is he's her nephew. I wonder if that's why he was scaled back a little bit. But yeah, he's a guy that was... he's a guy that was the breakout star in 2016, and now here we are in 2017, and it seems like he's been scaled back, big time.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, he is one of the feel-good TNA stories ever. You know, he was Derek Bateman in NXT. It was awful. That was before NXT was an interesting, good show. It was a joke. And then he jumped over, cut his hair, became a big player, and he actually worked in the role. He got better, showed a lot of confidence. But yeah, like you said, he completely – 2017 was just not a good year for him. His babyface turn was completely lackluster. He turned heel again. He feuded with AAA. Yeah, none of it really clicked. He seems like he should be a guy that's in the main event scene, but for most of the year he was slotted just below that. I mean, a few years ago I thought he had top. He could have been the number one babyface in the promotion, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, neither do I. And then we have LAX at number six, and that to me, you know, they're clearly the coolest act in the promotion, I think. Obviously the top tag team act. I didn't want to put them in the second tier just because I feel like they are clearly such a cool act that mm-hmm. they are in that top tier and are getting reactions worthy enough of being in that top tier.
Yeah. They've had a weird year as well. I've been fantastic to see them back. Management just did not give them a lot of credibility, it seemed. I mean, they gave them the numbers role. That's how they would win their fights, of course. But, I mean, we also saw El Patron and his dad and his brother kind of get the best of them weekly. I think El Patron beat them up by himself in a handicap match once. So it seems like they've been doing some damage control of that. They never had their turn babyface moment, really. They got beat up at Bound for Glory by OVE, who suddenly turned heel. But I think I've said it before, but just I would love to just see them build the company around these guys. Like you said, they're the coolest act going. There's nothing, absolutely nothing close to them in WWE at the moment. That's, you know, those everybody there feels cookie cutter and PG. These guys feel dangerous and edgy. I would love to see Impact go that route, and hopefully they stay in this top mix. Otherwise, I think it'll be another huge missed opportunity, just like they kind of squandered them away years ago in their first run.
Yeah, I agree. Of these guys, you know, Lashley, Eli Drake, EC3, that we've sort of discussed as being ones that are, even Eddie Edwards, that where it's been rumored that their contracts are up and they may move on, who do you kind of see as being potentially the biggest loss if they were to go elsewhere?
To me, it's Lashley. I know EC3 is a lot younger, but I don't think he is quite capable of carrying a company. I think he's maybe Miz type level. He's the upper mid card, can maybe now and then be slotted into the main event heel. I think Lashley's just more versatile. He's not even great on the mic. It's just that he feels believable. He's a good wrestler. He has a couple of years more of being a top star. And he just ties into their past of the past few years. I think he's been their MVP since about 2015. And I would hate to see him go at this point. But, who do you think of that group?
Yeah, I agree that it's Lashley. Just I feel like he's the biggest he's the biggest bona fide star that they have now. You know, he wasn't when he got there. He had a lot of flaws when he got there, but he's come a long way on the mic. I think he's come a long way in the ring. I think the fact that he is a top heavyweight in Bellator has definitely helped add kind of a mystique to him as well. Not as much as Brock Lesnar, but still, he's a bigger deal now than he was before that. So him to me, I think would be by far be the biggest loss. I think even EC3, I think, is a guy you can get over losing. I never thought, and it's been weird, I'm a fan of EC3, but I still don't think he's put it all together yet. And I think when he's a heel, he's still trying to be too cool. And, you know, you can't – I know we've talked about this and others have talked about it. When you're a heel, you can't be, you know, given cool lines and promos and being funny. You know, that's not what a heel does. So I think he falls into that too much when he's a heel. But the babyface turn didn't work as well as I thought it would either. So I kind of feel like he's stuck in a weird spot right now. And then Drake, you know, Drake's really good in the mic. He's okay in the ring, but he's really good in the mic. But I think that you can find a guy who's really good on the mic. I mean, I think that's a guy you could, as good as he's been, that's a guy that you could probably get over the loss of. Lashley is just such a dynamic performer that, you know, he's a guy that if he were to go back to WWE tomorrow and they, let's say, put him on SmackDown, I mean, he's going to be in a top spot on SmackDown almost right away. You know, he could very quickly be feuding with AJ Styles for the WWE title if he were back on SmackDown tomorrow. And I'm not sure anybody else on the roster in Impact right now is in that spot. You know, there's a lot of guys back a few years ago, there were a lot of guys that were, you could say, were in a similar case of, you know, they, if they had gone to WWE, would have been at the top of the card. Bobby Roode, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle. Now there's really just one of those guys, and to me it's Lashley.
Completely agree on that. And I think maybe next to AJ Styles, he would fare the best of like recent TNA alumni. I mean, Samoa Joe has done well for himself, but it doesn't seem like WWE is going to maybe not ever like fully invest in him as a top guy. Whereas I could see Vince McMahon, if he saw how much Lashley has improved, would at least, you know, potentially give him a run with the belt for the bit. And I think that would be a fantastic feud with him against AJ Styles, or yeah, throw him against Brock Lesnar. That is one guy that I think Impact does not want to lose at this point, because if you also look at name value, he's about as much as they have at this moment, and he doesn't carry the baggage of Alberto El Patron or maybe even Johnny Impact at this point.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. All right, anything else you want to add before we wrap this up? Because I'm rapidly losing my voice. anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast?
I don't think so. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see where this list is at a year, who else is going to come in, where Impact as a company is going to be, who's going to leave, who we'll see. So really interested. This is a very interesting time capsule piece that you did here. And yeah, I guess, you know, if I'll just go into quick plugs. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Andrew Socek, S-O-U-C-E-K. Also, catch me at pwpodcast.com. I'm an editor over there. We post recaps of the biggest wrestling podcasts out there. So instead of taking hours to listen to shows, just find out what's going on in a few minutes. And I think that's it for me.
All right, well, you can follow me on Twitter at MikeMcMahonPW. This depth chart story that we talked about over the course of the show today, you can check that out if you're a VIP member at PWTorch.com. All you got to do is go to PWTorch.com/GoVIP. You can read the PW Torch newsletter every single week, and this story ran in this week's edition of the PW Torch newsletter. So that'll do it for this week. I'm going to hope in 2018 that I get my voice back. That's my one big wish for the new year. And then I can stop coughing. That'd be great, too. The mute button has come in handy tonight, or else you'd all hear me coughing nonstop. Andrew, I said to you before the show, I have 4 bottles of water here at my desk. We've been talking for an hour, and I have about a quarter of one bottle left.
So, wow.
Oh, yeah. We're getting our H2O intake today. That's the only reason why I could still speak even a little bit right now. But that'll do it for this week's edition of the show. Again, Andrew and I will be back with you next week at 10 p.m. Eastern as soon as Impact goes off the air on Pop TV. We'll be here talking Impact Wrestling with you back in our regular time slot, back with our regular rotation of callers, back to normal as Impact kicks off the 2018 schedule next Thursday with some big matches, including I think James Storm against Dan Lambert is one of the advertised matches. That'll be next week. That'll do it for this week's edition of the show. Thanks again for listening. Remember to go to harrys.com/PWTorch to save on razors. And that'll do it for this week's edition of the show. So thanks again for listening. Andrew and I will talk to you next Thursday at 10 p.m.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cover Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cover Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.